and Jay Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. That's why I say
Amen. Every weekday at 8 o'clock, it is Shot or No Shot. Jeff Meller, Brian Hanley in for Cap and Jay Hood today. Of course, we're being produced by Charlie Bevins, who will take over as we do Shot or No Shots. Brought to you today by
Club Hawthorne. Bet the Breeders' Cup on November 4th and 5th at a newly remodeled Club Hawthorne betting bar. And you hear that sound? That's the sound of our good friend, Secretariat. Next time you hear Secretariat on Cap and Jay Hood, give us a call. And if you're in the caller number 5, you will get a $100 in food and beverage credit, $425 wagering vouchers for the live racing programs and Hawthorne branded items.
Can I go back and bet the Breeders' Cup on the 4th and 5th now that I know what the results were?
Does it work that way? That could... Listen, you want to entice some new gamblers. That's the way to do it, I think.
Here you go. Yeah. A couple weeks past the Breeders' Cup, let's go run those again.
Retroactively, go ahead and bet them. Of course, Secretariat, according to half the Cap and Jay Hood show, the greatest athlete in the history of sports.
I mean, I have a great appreciation for horse racing and actually had and owned some horses, but no.
But no. That's fair. All right. I'm Meller and Hanley in for Cap and Jay Hood this morning. All right, Charlie, get us kicked off here. Shot or no shot?
All right, let's do this. The Bears traveled to New York this weekend to take on the Jets, who seem to be in a bit of disarray after benching Zach Wilson following Sunday's abysmal performance. That will mean a reeling Jets team will be led by Mike White. After this game, the Bears face the Packers, Eagles, Bills, Lions, and Vikings. So, shot or no shot? This Sunday is the last winnable game on the Bears' schedule.
No shot. No shot. It's the NFL. I think the Lions still on the schedule make it easy to say that's winnable. Now, whether or not the Bears win it, Bri, I think that's certainly up for debate, but it's hard to envision. That would also, by the way, mean that the Bears, if they don't win a game here, would mean they close it on a 10-game losing streak.
See.
And let's be honest. Unless Justin Fields is shut down for the season, I don't think this is a roster that is going to go 10 straight games without a win.
No, I'm with you. No shot, because I didn't believe there was, you know, like the Matt Nagy years where you had 5 and 6 losing streaks. Just as a matter of fact, you just knew there were going to one, at least one was going to come, if not two in the season. This looks like a professional group running the show now. So I didn't see that. Now they've lost 5 of 6. So it's not the best you envisioned, but it's okay because you're going to have a better draft position. But I'm with you. Other teams have found a way to beat the Packers. If you're not going to do it this year, I don't know when you're going to do it. So I'm with you. That 10-game losing streak, that's almost impossible to do in the NFL. And I get that the Lions went 0-16 at one point, but that's really tough to do.
And especially, too, they'd also be theoretically, closing it out with the Vikings and with the win last night. The Vikings are now 9-2. They might
be
in a situation.
Yeah,
the last game of the season, that also could be. It could look very different when we approach it on the final Sunday of the year as to whether or not it's, quote, winnable down the stretch here.
All right. After trading their own second-round pick for Chase Claypool, emphasis on their own, not the one they got from the Ravens, it's been mostly crickets from the Bears' new receiver. In 3 games, he's been targeted 11 times and has gotten 5 receptions for only 32 yards. We've reached a point in this season where we just want to see who can be a foundational piece for the future. So shot or no shot, the Bears cannot go into the offseason with lingering questions about if Claypool is, quote, their guy.
I'll give you honors here, Bri.
I mean, I thought we'd be seeing a lot more of him by now than we have. Veteran guy, and that they said he'll pick everything up quickly. And then like a week and a half into it, they're like, oh, you know, it takes a while for him to get the terminology down. And they kind of sing a different tune. I think by the end of the season, no shot. I mean, you're going to figure this out. Maybe Trevor Siemian is the key to unlock the new receiver. I'm being facetious. With Trevor Siemian, who can't run. Jeff, have you been clocked in the 40 before?
You know, I never have, Bri.
Neither have I. 4.94 for Trevor Siemian. I'm guessing you, in the great shape that you're in, could better those numbers.
Yeah, they're. But, They're probably not going to be running the ball the way they do with Justin Fields with Trevor Siemian. That's for sure. I wouldn't think so.
So maybe he, they're forced, because he's a pocket guy, maybe they're forced to throw the ball, and maybe Chase is actually a guy on the receiving end. You got to see. I mean, you gave up a pretty good price to get him, and I was all for it. So let's see sooner than later what you have here.
Yeah, no, I think it's certainly something that we're all hopeful to see him use more and what he's capable of. He's got that 6'4 frame. He's almost 240 pounds. And Chase Claypool, at least we know him in the 40, blistering pace, 4'4 something in the 40 at the combine. Now, the question I think is we're wondering here in Chicago is, you know, does he play at that speed or does he actually play slower in pads, right? Like, that's kind of what we're wondering right now. Now, to your point, Bri, about picking up the playbook, yeah, that's certainly been a little bit of a concern over the last couple weeks, but I'm not necessarily going to freak out just yet. And to the shot or no shot idea, Charlie, I think it's actually, how did you ask us specifically?
Yeah, like, do you,
shot or no shot, the Bears.
Is it okay for the Bears to still wonder if Chase Claypool is a foundational piece? Or do they have to know whether he is or not by the end of the season?
I would say no shot. They don't need to know just yet, because here's the thing. They still have him under contract for a year after this year. And even though we all want the answers, I think we will know at least enough about where he's at. And they don't need to make a decision on a long-term contract, Brian. Like, the way a lot of people are like, listen, if you traded a second-round pick for him, you imagine, right, that you want to get him locked up to a long-term deal.
Yeah, well,
I agree. I mean, but you also need to see, he needs to display for them that he's worth any long-term contract that he's going to want.
But the conversation they had before they made that trade tells you that they think they know what they have, mm-hmm. because they gave up the second round pick for him. So, I mean, it's not like he just got drafted. For whatever reason, the Steelers weren't high on him, but you gave up a pretty good asset there in that second round pick. So I hope that your scouting staff, your pro scouts, and everyone else think they have a handle on the guy, even though we haven't seen it to this point.
Yeah.
The other part of that, too, is I heard Dan Durkin on Waddle and Silly the other day. He's saying he's just not the same kind of run blocker that St. Brown and Dante Pettis are. So that's the other kind of concern.
We're circling back. It shouldn't be about the runs. I mean, at some point when Justin was healthy, you want to see more passing. Averaging less than 20 passes per game does not get it done. And I know that they doubled the point production, but you got to have a big boy offense going to deep and going downfield, and you have to figure that out. And now it's on pause, no matter if he's out there or not.
Yeah, no, the one thing I'll say is, what gives me hope is that his rookie year, he was a dynamic playmaker with Ben Roethlisberger throwing him the ball. He had 62 catches, 873 yards, and he caught 9 touchdowns. He also ran in 2 touchdowns that season. So he had 11 touchdowns in his rookie year, and he was a big playmaker. So even though we all want him to pick up the playbook quickly, like some players, it just takes a little while. And he has done it at the pro level for one season. And even his second year, while it wasn't as productive touchdown-wise, he still was able to log 860 yards and another 59 catches. So I think he's a starting caliber wide receiver. I think the question is, everyone hopes, can he be that 1A type
difference maker?
And I don't know if we're there with him just yet, but at the very least, I think he'll be an improvement long term on what they had with the receiving core. And so, the truth is, I think you need 3 good wide receivers in the NFL anyway these days.
Sure.
So he may not be the number one, but maybe he can be part of that trio that you rely on going forward.
All right. Last week against the Falcons, rookie safety Jaquan Brisker was everywhere for the Bears, allowing only one reception in 23 coverage snaps. He also had 11 tackles and a forced fumble. The youngin has come along quite quickly for the Bears, so shot or no shot, Jaquan Brisker is already the best defensive player on the Bears.
Ooh.
Ooh. it's you're not spoiled for choice.
It's true. That it's not necessarily a high bar to clear to say that. The only thing I'll give it a shot, because I'm not saying he definitely is, but I definitely think between him and Eddie Jackson are the two. And Eddie Jackson obviously has had his own issues in the past, but I think Eddie Jackson has been really good this year, and he's lived up to the contract. But outside of those two at this point, because I think Jalen Johnson, you know, even though he's playing banged up, he's regressed a little bit this season. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a shot definitely between him and Eddie Jackson.
Yeah, shot. And I'm a little disappointed that Kyler Gordon isn't in the conversation anywhere close. But, you know, they're both in concussion protocol now, too, right? So
correct. And yeah, neither practiced yesterday.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I like everything about Brisker. But again, when you traded Roquan and Smith, you know, the bar, as Jeff said, got a lot lower to clear. And you didn't have, you know, beyond that much going in anyway.
So we'll say shot, but it's not like a huge endorsement necessarily.
Yes.
But I think we're both happy with Jaquan Brisker.
Absolutely.
You know, the question is, too, like, you know, I think maybe they shouldn't be, but it's one of those things where because they were both drafted in the second round, Brisker and Gordon, and because they were both drafted ahead of wide receivers like George Pickens, who are still on the board, they're going to be linked to oftentimes Brisker and Gordon, unless Brisker just completely separates himself to a point where he's, you know, a perennial Pro Bowler. So they're always going to be linked in some ways in Bears fans' mind, because I think a lot of people were hoping they would draft one of those, you know, wide receiver playmaker types. And instead you got Velus Jones Jr. in the third round.
Oof. Yeah.
Okay, well, we talked about the Bears. Let's talk about the team they're about to face this week. The Jets team the Bears are about to play is one of the best New York has had in a while. At 6-4, they have taken a step forward this year. But they just benched their starting quarterback they picked in the top five in 2021. Because they've gotten the QB so wrong so quickly, shot or no shot, General Manager Joe Douglas and Coach Robert Saleh will be on the hot seat this offseason in New York.
Shot, because anytime, and we lived through it with Mitch Trubisky, and I know a lot of people said that it was the coach not doing any favors for Mitch Trubisky, and if he had better organization and better coaching around him, he'd be a different quarterback. But, you know, the league has pretty much made the decision on Mitch now, 3.0, even in Pittsburgh. When you get the quarterback wrong and when you draft that high, and talk to Ryan Pace about it, sets you back about 5 years. I mean, that's how drastic when you're in that position in the draft. And obviously, Pace gave up the farm to move one spot because he thought imaginary GMs were going to take his guy. And so he was on the phone to John Lynch, and John Lynch couldn't even understand what he was doing. But he did it, and he did it by himself. You get the quarterback wrong, the clock's ticking on you and your administration. It's that simple.
Yeah, no, it certainly accelerates the process of where you're at when your quarterback is this spectacularly bad this quickly. And it doesn't help matters for the Jets when you've got Justin Fields, who was drafted behind Zach Wilson, balling out and making people regret. You know, that's a lot of what Mitch Trubisky faced, right? If Mitch Trubisky was just a bust, it would have been bad enough. But the fact that Patrick Mahomes and then Deshaun Watson, at least what he's capable of on the field, those two were drafted behind him and were on the board, certainly made the Mitch Trubisky conversation that much more difficult for the Bears to continue to have, you know, day in and day out while they were here. So I think if Justin Fields continues to play well, that won't help Zach Wilson. And then, by the way, if Trey Lance comes back next season and starts to play well too, you know, or
that's a big if.
Yes,
yeah.
No doubt about it, but it's certainly in play. All of a sudden, it looks that much worse, though, if you've got multiple quarterbacks who are drafted behind you playing that much better. Maybe, though, the key for the Jets, and Zach Wilson, I think, is making this easier. The key is, if you can cut ties quickly, though, and admit your mistake, like the Cardinals did when they drafted Josh Rosen, right? They got the number one overall pick, and they quickly bailed and said, you know what? Josh Rosen, after 1 year, wasn't the guy, and they said, let's go draft Kyler Murray. If the Jets this year bail on Zach Wilson and maybe make a free agent acquisition, you know, a stopgap QB who can take advantage of what the Jets have around the roster, maybe you can buy yourself a little bit of time. Because I do think
their defense is, I mean, you know, Robert Saleh's doing something right, because you know, the defense is among the best in you know, allowing 18.6 points, and we talked about the six most sacks this season, and Charlie just said the 6-4 record. I mean, the coach is doing pretty well, and he didn't draft the quarterback. So But if you get rid of the GM, then they usually come in and want to put their own guy in place. And we've seen GMs here have to live with a coach, good or bad. And it usually doesn't work out well when it's not their guy.
Charlie, how many more did you prep for us? Do you have a couple more?
Yeah, I had one more.
All right. You know what? Let's take that on the other side. And, of course, we will also give away when you hear Secretariat when we come back. We'll do that right here on ESPN 1000. Mellor and Hanley in for Cap and Jay Hood.
Cap and Jay Hood. Jay Hood.
Is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Watch us and join the chat. Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago on twitch.tv or the Twitch app.
In for Cap and Jay Hood this Friday morning after Thanksgiving. Charlie Bevins is producing this fine show for you, and we continue on with Shot or No Shot. One final question for us here. What do we got, Charlie?
Yeah, I wanted to do a Thanksgiving one real quick. It seems every year that people make the discovery that some of their Thanksgiving sides are maybe not as universally done as they thought they were. This year, it seemed mac and cheese was the one that was debated most on Twitter. So shot or no shot, mac and cheese is a necessary Thanksgiving side.
Hold on a second. Before we get into this, Charlie, how old are you?
I am 23.
Yes. So it's funny because, Bri, I'm sure this seems like you said it was hot this year on Twitter. I feel like the mac and cheese debate occurs every single year. It's been going on at least for the last 30 years of my life. Do you agree, Brian, that mac and cheese is always a hot button topic?
I was just at the neighborhood dog park the other day, and two people were debating this about 10 feet from me.
Mm-hmm.
I think and no shot for me because I think it's a big deal in the South.
Mm-hmm.
It was not. I think most people have a pretty basic tradition or their family tradition. Either you're a mac and cheese family or not. Right?
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
Either you grew up with that. I mean, I remember we had, I don't even know what this is, mincemeat pie.
Okay.
I don't know what that is. I've never tasted it, but it was always there on Thanksgiving. I don't know if relatives brought it. My mom made it. It just sounds like you don't want to eat
yeah.
it. Mincemeat pie. But it was there next to the pumpkin pie. But the mac and cheese thing, I never grew up with it, so I didn't even consider it. And I've heard this debate the last few years, you know, heating up. And I just dismiss it because it wasn't a thing for me, and I don't know if you know, your experience is different, Jeff, but you're a Thanksgiving guy, and so I'd love to hear from you.
So,
it's your favorite holiday, right?
Yeah, no, and then here's the thing. I love a good mac and cheese. Now, I don't want
me too.
I don't personally want to go with the Velveeta shells and cheese route.
Mm.
Not that that can't get it done in a pinch, depending
sure.
on the situation. You know, late night of drinking, sometimes Velveeta shells and cheese is exactly what you need.
Takes you right back to your college days.
Absolutely.
Yeah. yeah.
But the truth is, if I'm going to, you know, go now we don't traditionally have mac and cheese at our Thanksgiving dinner. However, I am a big fan of, like I said, it done correctly. And I personally have over the last couple of years kind of cultivated my own personal mac and cheese recipe. I've taken, you know, online nowadays, you can basically, I feel like if you're willing to do just a little bit of work, you can figure out how to cook anything you want. If you're,
sure.
if you're willing to put in just a little bit of time and research. And so I've developed my own personal mac and cheese recipe over the last couple of years.
Do tell Rachel, right? What's going in a Gouda? What kind of cheese were you using?
So you want, listen, so there's you want to get some cheddar cheese, obviously. Listen, there's a whole process. I have it typed out at home on a recipe sheet. I will actually have to go home and I can tweet it out after the show because
sure.
I don't have the specifics because I don't make it enough because it is somewhat labor intensive. I'm not going to lie. And generally, when we host Thanksgiving, we've got so many other things going on that I personally don't put in the time to make the mac and cheese. However, when I do want to cook the mac and cheese, I'm more than happy to do it, but it's usually a Sunday. It's a whole extravagant thing. You know, it's not so crazy, but it does end up taking, you know, an hour to prep mac and cheese and, you know, get into the oven and ready to go. So it's a long process for just mac and cheese, but it comes out and I'm very happy with the product in the end. But I don't have the time to put into that on our traditional Thanksgiving Day dinner because of everything else that we're prepping usually. Now, normally, yeah, I will say this, if we're divvying up like sides where we're bringing it, then I may, you know, volunteer to make it in the right situation. It just depends on what's going on. But like if we're hosting the whole day, then I'm probably not doing that because it's too much time.
That takes me back to the top of the show when I asked you, and you said this is your favorite holiday.
It is, yes.
The whole meal is labor intensive.
It is, yes.
And you know, we were talking, Connor McKnight tweeted out that it was just he and his wife. So you're not making the big Thanksgiving spread. Or he said the first time he went no turkey and he went with a beef tenderloin because it's just the two of them. And people start responding that they've given up on the traditional Thanksgiving meal a long time ago and that they were lasagna was a thing. I mean, the responses were pretty interesting to see what people fried chicken. And so shot or no shot, Jeff Mellor, your favorite holiday. Could you forego the traditional Thanksgiving meal and just start mixing it up every year, something different? And you know, what would you miss dressing or, you know, stuffing? Are you a stuff the bird guy or the dressing comes on the side because, you know, you think you're going to get some botulism or something if you put it in the cavity of the bird?
Now, my wife makes a good stuffing and she does it on the side, not into the bird. Also, just because I think she's told me it's better with that crispiness, right? When you put it into the bird more often than not.
It's moist.
Yeah, and so you have to.
If I may say so.
Yes, no doubt about it. So she prefers it a little bit on the crispier side. So does most of the family. So she just mixes it in a bowl and tosses it into the oven. However, stuffing, not my personal favorite. Here's the one thing. I would say shot, Bri, I could forego it, but only in the event that basically I was going to cook a Thanksgiving Day meal on Christmas. That would be my follow-up. I could forego it if I was going to have turkey on Christmas, but if we're not doing that, if we're doing a ham or something on Christmas, and I'm not going to have turkey at all that year, then I would have a hard time passing on the traditional Thanksgiving Day dinner because it's the one day a year that I eat turkey. I mean, I'm trying to think, does anybody else eat turkey any other day?
Well, I mean,
on
turkey
the year?
Sandwiches don't count. The roasted bird.
Correct.
Shot or no shot, could you start buying the entire meal from a grocery store like a lot of people are doing because they don't want to deal with all the prep and the full day of cooking? And so now you see people on Wednesday or Thanksgiving morning, you know, picking up the turkey, all the sides, putting it in the car and just putting it out on the table and saying, enjoy. Even does that take away from the whole idea of Thanksgiving?
So I would be okay with that to save on the prep work and just the, you know, the hours that you're going to put into it. I would be okay with that once in a while, but I will say, you know, like my mom makes a sweet potato casserole type dish that's topped with brown sugar and some you know, pecans on top there. So if my mom can go ahead and cook that and then we can go ahead and purchase everything else, I'm probably cool with that. It's just there's one or two traditional side dishes or whatever I feel like that everybody kind of grew up with that they love, that it's that one thing you look forward to every year. So as long as I can make that one dish, then I'm cool with it. Or let me rephrase, Bri. As long as I can have my mom do the work and make that one dish for us that she's so good at, then maybe I'm okay with purchasing the rest.
Amen. I've never been a sweet potato guy, but you know, each his own. So
hey, man, listen. I want to say I tried for 10 years to get my wife to try sweet potatoes. She had never tried them. And when I met her in college, I would go to her grandmother's house for Thanksgiving dinner a couple of times before we were married. And her grandmother was so happy that I came because I told her I enjoyed sweet potatoes. Nobody in her family would eat them, but she loved them, but she never prepared them. Once I started coming around for Thanksgiving dinner, she would make them every year for me, and she was ecstatic because now she finally had someone who was willing to eat them with her. Then, 10 years later, my wife finally, I don't know
what, broke her down.
One time she decides to try it, and she was like, oh my God, these are pretty good. And now, I kid you not, Bri, my wife literally eats sweet potatoes in almost 5 days a week. She makes sweet potato waffles that she'll throw into the oven for breakfast every morning.
Wow.
So it's funny. It took 10 years of me knowing her to finally try them, and then now she eats them almost every day.
That's why you're soulmates.
Exactly right. He's Brian Hanley. I'm Jeff Meller. We're not soulmates. We're just filling in for Cap and Jay Hood. Those two soulmates will be back on Monday. Plenty to talk about with you, 312-332-3776. If you'd like to share what side you need on Thanksgiving, you couldn't pass it up. Or if you just want to talk about the Bears and whether or not you want to see Justin Fields play on Sunday, risk a banged up shoulder injury, we're here for that as well. A guy who made his trek here initially in Chicago, folks are very familiar with, one Mike Greenberg, was on with Waddle and Sylvie on Wednesday, and you may or may not know, I think most people do, Bri, he's a pretty big Jets fan. Well, Greeny weighed in on the Bears-Jets on Sunday and whether or not he thinks the Jets are in trouble going forward and whether or not the Bears should be even considering playing Justin Fields. We'll let you hear what he had to say next.
Don't miss the conversation.
Cap and Jay Hood.
Tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
Cap and Hoodie.
Bop, 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 bop.
And listen to Cap and Jay Hood at home and in the office.
Now, back to more Cap and Jay Hood on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
If you're listening earlier, you know what that sound means. 312-332-3776 to get hooked up. I'm Jeff Meller along with Brian Hanley as we fill in for Cap and Jay Hood this morning here on the day after Thanksgiving. Bri, so you know Greeny pretty well, I'd say.
I used to do weekend shows with him about 30 years ago, and our careers took divergent paths. Let's see. He turned into Greeny. And I'm here working with you, which I love, but not making, you know, God bless. Knew early on that Greeny was going to be big, I mean, huge, and knew that TV was going to be his calling in some regard, too. And it's all turned out to be true because he was that talented then, and he's certainly that talented now. So, back in the day when we started sports talking in this town, he and I would do some Saturday and Sunday shows together, and here he is. He's a superstar.
And you can still hear him daily from 10 to noon. The Greeny Show will be up after us today. And, of course, he is still a good friend of the station. He joins Waddle and Sylvie quite frequently, as he did this past Wednesday. And I know a listener pointed out that this Sunday truly is the Greeny Bowl because of the potential. Now, if Justin, this was also before it looked. It does. I do feel like, I don't know, correct me if you disagree here, Bri, it does feel a little more likely today than it did to me maybe on Tuesday that Justin Fields could be starting on Sunday. Do you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, sadly, I do. Yeah. I don't think it's the wise choice, and some of our Twitter followers are voicing their concerns as well. But, you know, there's a football mindset, like you talked earlier in the show, and it takes a lot to, again, if they leave it up to him, he's going to play. And I don't know that they should leave it up to him because there's only one decision he can make, and that's to take the shot, numbing up, and go out there and see what he can do.
So, yeah, even though it does seem, which, again, for fans, it'll be more interesting to watch the game. But, of course, for the organization, I don't know if it is the best decision. Nevertheless, prior to knowing that, the idea that this is the Greeny Bowl coming up on Sunday, because, of course, Greeny is a staunch supporter of the Jets. And, of course, he covered the Bears for a significant portion of time during his days here in Chicago when he was doing talk shows with you on Saturday mornings. And also, of course, there was the potential, or at least there still is, if Justin Fields does not go, Trevor Siemian will be starting for the Bears. And, of course,
Northwestern's really
young. Yes, yes. So thus, it has been dubbed the Greeny Bowl by some, which was all the reason we needed, as if we needed any reason, but all the more reason to have Greeny on Waddle and Sylvie. And Greeny discussed where the Jets are at, and I thought he made an interesting point, maybe one that I don't necessarily completely agree with, but I'll let you hear what he had to say with Waddle and Sylvie on Wednesday.
The Jets have a loaded roster, guys. Yeah. The Jets are what you are hoping
the Bears are next year. The Bears, if everything goes extraordinarily well in Chicago this offseason, then the Bears are going to be where the Jets are right now. They're going to have spent some of this free agent money really wisely in some really smart places, on not necessarily on huge name players, but players who fit exactly what they need, and they're going to hit on all these draft picks, which the Jets have done, the best of whom, unfortunately, is hurt. You're not going to get to see Breece Hall, the running back, because he's out for the year, but he's tremendous. Sauce Gardner is tremendous. The Jets have a bunch of Garrett Wilson. They have a bunch of really good, talented young players. So if the quarterback just plays decently, the Jets should win this game on Sunday if Mike White just doesn't hand the game away, particularly if Justin isn't able to play. But this, I think, will be an interesting game for the Bears fan to watch, because what you are seeing on the field is exactly the template of what I think the Bears could be next year, but they should actually be several steps ahead because their young quarterback is infinitely better.
It's really funny to see how somebody on the outside who's not as, you know, knee-deep into it as we are on a day-to-day basis, how they observe. And, of course, Greeny looks around the league, you know, more than most, because obviously he is doing TV and radio every single day, so he needs to know the league as a whole very well. I find it interesting, though, I look at the Jets roster, and you mentioned it, Brian, earlier, that defense is hellacious. They're amongst the best in the league. Quinnen Williams is just a force at the defensive tackle spot. Greeny mentioned Sauce Gardner. He might be, in his rookie year, he might be the best cornerback in football already. They do a really nice job defensively, and he said the Jets are where the Bears hope they are next year. Man, that is, if they could, because of all the pieces the Jets currently have, he said Breece Hall, who of course tore his ACL, Garrett Wilson, who played with Justin Fields in Ohio State, looks like he has the makings of a clear number one wide receiver. Dwayne Brown, you know, Mekhi Becton, who's on injured reserve and not even playing this year. There, to me, the Jets have a lot of really good pieces that the Bears don't have. If the Bears get anywhere close to developing the type of roster by next year, I would be stunned. Like, I think Greeny's a little bit too optimistic about what's currently on the Bears roster outside of Justin Fields.
Well, and Jeff, he said, well, we know that they have the most salary cap money coming in the offseason by a country mile, right? $100+ million. You hope Ryan Poles is going to spend that wisely. Do we know yet that he said that he'll hit on every draft pick? Well, no GM does that. Do we even know what that track record? It's too early to tell what Ryan Poles' draft record looks like. He's had mixed results after the first one, right? So I can't go there yet. I don't know how good a GM he's going to be. I think he, you know, he's going to be good, you know, in the long term. But I need to see more. I mean, some of the picks he made this year have been some okay, some not so good, and. Yeah, you know, that's pretty optimistic that he's going to hit on every draft pick.
Yeah, and it does, though. It looks at, like, I look at, you know, Greeny watches the Jets, you know, his team, very closely and, you know, under a microscope, and sees how problematic it is with Zach Wilson as their quarterback. And as we talked about earlier, you know, the idea that you set your franchise back 5 years if you miss on that or if you whiff on the quarterback spot. And then he looks at everything else that's in place and he says, hey, the Jets are 6-4. Where could they be if they had someone like Justin Fields? But the reality is the Bears are just like, boy, where could we be if we had all the Jets' talent surrounding Justin Fields? You know, but of course the Jets are, if they can just get that quarterback, they're in a little bit better spot. Here's more from Greeny, specifically about Fields versus Wilson.
For the folks in Chicago who've not seen the Jets play, the Jets have managed to go 5-2 with Zach Wilson as their quarterback. And Zach has had about as much to do with those five wins as I have. And all I've done is watch and cheer. the Jets defense is extraordinarily rough on quarterbacks. Yeah. They generate as much pressure without having to bring extra people as any team in the league, and that's inclusive of Dallas and anybody else you want to name. So I agree with you, and I absolutely love the Justin Fields story, and I think there is such a fascinating the big storyline on this game, and it's a terrible shame if neither one of them play, but the fact that Zach Wilson wound up being drafted well ahead of Justin Fields, and the fact that was not considered to be a shocking development when it happened, is probably the best illustration of what is wrong with the pre-draft process in the National Football League as anything I could ever think of. That said, I agree with you that it is probably best to keep Fields away from this pass rush because nothing good can happen to his shoulder this Sunday.
Really fascinating to hear. Like, Greeny, from the sounds of it, he's convinced that Justin Fields is the next great quarterback star in this league when you listen to him talk.
Here's hoping, and I've seen enough this year that he's taken a huge step toward that. Still don't know if he's going to be the guy who can throw the ball like we see some of these other young quarterbacks doing and doing it on a weekly basis. Because, frankly, they haven't given him, one, the offensive line to do it successfully, and two, enough opportunity. So I saw someone write a week or so ago, 2 weeks ago, that Ryan Pace, if Justin Fields in fact turns out to be a franchise quarterback, we'll remember Ryan Pace more fondly, or much more fondly than we do. To me, it was a calculated move to buy himself some time. He needed to move up yet again in the draft and draft a guy like Justin Fields, if not Justin Fields. And the plan with Matt Nagy was not even get him on the field the first year. And the cynic in me said that by not getting him on the field the first year, their jobs were safe because we wouldn't know. It would put off even eyeballing Justin Fields for at least a year and then another year of development. So I don't know that I'm going to remember much of Ryan Pace fondly, if at all.
No, I completely agree with you. It absolutely was a move that reeked of self-preservation for Ryan Pace. You know, he had botched Trubisky as bad as you possibly could. Almost every first-round pick that he had in his time here, ends up, like, I mean, and honestly, now if we look back too, like the one you always pointed to was like, oh, well, at least he had Roquan Smith, but we see how Ryan Poles chose to play that out was, you know, so ultimately, even that, while Raul,
only 19 players on this roster were from the previous GM,
and
in a very short time they've made a determination that they can do without a lot of these guys.
No, that's a great point. It's almost stunning when you look at it, like a year removed, and you've only got 19 players left from the previous season. That is infinitesimal when you look at it around the league. Normally, you know, you're looking at 25, 30 players carried over on a year-to-year basis because, you know, turnover, it's just, you know, there's so many replacement-level players out there, but you hope you have the makings of you know, at least half your roster on a year-to-year basis, but that's not the case. And honestly, Bri, they have 19 from the previous regime, and I wouldn't be shocked at all if next year it's looking at more like 10. Based on contract status and, you know, what they're going to be looking at, because I don't think too many players who have been on the Bears roster from the Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy era have done much to really impress Ryan Poles. Anyway,
how many foundational pieces are here? So when that window to compete for a division, let alone a Super Bowl, opens up in a couple of years, 2-3 years, how many on this current roster will be on the roster at that point? I mean, it's, I'm with you. They might half that number, 19, or cut it by 9 or 10 in the offseason, and here we go again.
Thought it was interesting to hear a Jets fan's perspective on the Bears and the Jets as they get set to square off on Sunday in New York. I'm Jeff Meller. He's Brian Hanley. This is Cap and Jay Hood on ESPN 1000.
This is Cap and Jay Hood. Follow on Instagram at CapJHood.
This is ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
So when I looked at my Twitter this morning, I saw Brian Hanley tweeting out about what we were going to talk about here as we fill in for Cap and Jay Hood on ESPN 1000, ESPN Chicago. And I was surprised to see the question asked by Brian, have the Bulls turned the corner? Do you believe they've turned the corner, Brian Hanley?
Well, you know, a few weeks ago, Mark Zander and I, one of our weekend shows, were talking about the beloved Bulls. And I asked the question, what is there one thing they do well? And the answer at that point was no. I mean, they didn't score. They didn't stop teams from scoring. Their starters were digging holes, deep holes in the first quarter, like basically not coming ready to play most nights. And this was a team that the front office doubled down on continuity, right? Didn't do anything major in the offseason. And unfortunately, they probably believe Lonzo Ball would be out there leading this team, and we don't have any idea. It's nowhere near close to having Lonzo Ball back and going on a year now. But who saw them handily beating the Celtics and then going up to Milwaukee and digging a 12-point hole early and finding a way? I mean, coming up with season highs in threes and season highs in blocks and steals. And, it's two games and it's a snapshot. But given the fact that a week ago Zach LaVine was being benched and complaining about it, and you thought there might be a tipping point going even further the other way, they found a way, and they have Utah on the docket next. I hope they've turned a corner, but at least you're seeing a hint of a heartbeat or a pulse here. I mean, Patrick Williams is all of a sudden making a presence known, but I don't know where you stood on them. I didn't think they would have a losing record going at this point in the season, going into the season, but I didn't know Lonzo Ball was going to be on the shelf still either. So,
well, I'll say I'm surprised in light of where they were at, to your point about the Orlando Magic loss, where, like you said, Zach LaVine was benched. He was benched after being called out pregame, him, Vooch, DeMar having to set the intensity level. And even though DeMar was included, it felt like that was more directed at Vooch and Zach LaVine from Billy Donovan. Perhaps he threw DeMar in there to give himself a little bit of cover, but nevertheless, it was clearly directed more at Vooch and Zach LaVine. And as you said, then, immediately hearing Zach in postgame fail to take any real accountability and actually complaining about the fact that, despite the fact that he was missing shots all night long.
1-14, if I remember right.
He still wanted to be out there. And then, oh, by the way, they may have lost that game to Orlando, but when did they make the run? The almost the moment when Zach LaVine went to the bench, right? They came back and actually took the lead. So if anything, it felt like Billy doing his best to push some buttons actually did find something close to a solution. They just couldn't hang on. They ended up losing that game 108-107 after actually taking the lead in it when Zach went to the bench. Yeah, I was a little surprised that now they beat Boston on Monday night. And then also, they beat Milwaukee on Wednesday. Before Utah, they do have OKC tonight, which will be interesting because I'll tell you what. If you look at the rosters coming in, the Bulls, to your point, like you certainly expected after last season, they were going to be competitive. Now, I made the point that I thought they were much more likely destined for a play-in spot because of what I viewed in the East, the teams around them getting better. And the Bulls failing to, again, the rallying cry was all about continuity, right?
Right.
And getting better. And how can you be continuous if you don't have the, Lonzo Ball, who was a key piece to your success last year, right? Like, there is no continuity when that player is missing from the roster. But here's the thing. I did not expect the Bulls to be 8-10 at this point in the year. I also didn't expect Oklahoma City to be 7-11 because I think most people looked at the Thunder and said, hey, that's a team that's tanking. They want in on the Victor Wembanyama sweepstakes. And the truth is that they've got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who has turned into an absolute stud. He's averaging 31 points a game. He's amongst the most efficient players in all of basketball. This is a guy who, if you like, because I imagine a lot of people out there don't watch a lot of Oklahoma City basketball the last few years because they haven't been very watchable. But I'll tell you what, you're going to get a look at a guy who might be the next true superstar in this league. He's 24 years old. And while OKC has done what they can to try and ensure that they're in the lottery, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is almost single-handedly carrying them to wins and potentially preventing that. And while the Bulls have kind of cemented themselves with the roster they have, the OKC and Sam Presti have built up a war chest of draft picks, and they have this young burgeoning superstar. I mean, I'll tell you what, I'm envious as a Bulls fan of the team they're about to play, who's 7-11, one game worse, but it's all about how you've built the team around them, right? Like, it just looks like OKC is going to be much more likely to be on the ascent in the next few years. Whereas the Bulls, I think everyone's kind of, if you're a Chicago Bulls fan, you're looking at it going, what is your path forward?
Yeah. You need three legitimate stars to be a contending team, right? To win a conference, win a title. The fact that Zach LaVine was benched for the last 3.5-4 minutes after being the max money guy in the offseason, I mean, the superstars in this league are never in that conversation. That's not even a consideration for coaches,
right? No, yeah.
And I don't know where you are in Zach. I mean, I think he's a good, very good player. Is he a team that's going to lead you to a title? No, not in my world. He might be that third guy if you got two guys who are better than he is.
Mm-hmm.
He was in the perfect situation. The Bulls had the money. He was obviously the guy who was going to get paid if anybody was, and they paid him. And he's just too inconsistent, and his defense is too inconsistent. And, you know, last week he actually started talking in the third person, which is always a red flag for me.
Oh, yeah.
So he got paid, but I think a couple years ago, a poll of NBA players put him like 26th, 28th as best player in the league. And by his peers voted this, right?
Yep.
That doesn't scream superstar to me. And it's not anything, it's not his fault. I mean, he is who he is. He's a very good player. And you could have him on your roster and win something, but he can't be the guy. And to your point, DeMar DeRozan, God bless him, he still has a Superman cape on many nights. And last year he had it on the entirety of the season. He can't keep doing that. And you can't keep expecting him to score 35 to 40 points on a regular basis. So I'm with you. I'm envious of young talent that emerges immediately instead of getting guys like Patrick Williams or even Kobe White and wondering what you have here. To the point where, they're going to trade him, Kobe White, but they didn't like what they heard in return. And thank God he had a game yesterday, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he's that hasn't been consistent nearly enough. So I don't know how you get from here to there when double continuity. And I saw one mock draft already, Jeff. Chris Murray was the projected Bulls pick. Forward from Iowa, which, you know, it's kind of silly to me that you're after like 2 weeks of college basketball, you're already trying to figure out which team's going to select which player. But yeah. I mean, I was hoping the Bulls would get better, and they surprised everyone last year. They were a feel good story until the midseason when everyone got hurt and Lonzo Ball got hurt, and then they kind of petered out and just limped into the playoffs. But they're good enough to be a playoff team, but they're not nearly good enough to be in a conversation to win a title.
Maybe the Bulls wanted to hear some names in that Kobe White package, something more similar to what they obtained when they traded Lauri Markkanen. Oh, wait. He's also leading the Utah Jazz, who they'll get a look at after the OKC Thunder. He's also leading that team in scoring, and they're like the surprise of the league. Now, they've scuffled a bit the last few games, but still 12-8. There's mm-hmm. some people who didn't believe the Utah Jazz had 12 wins in that roster all year long, much less through the first 20.
Lauri Markkanen's leading the team scoring.
How about that?
We hardly knew you.
All right. Well, coming up next, back to Bears talk. And, of course, we've got the Friday folder. It's Friday, so we will let you know about what we missed throughout the week. I'm Jeff Meller. He's Brian Hanley, in for Cap and Jay Hood on ESPN 1000.